But then they're all mixed together in inscrutable ways, especially in the age of Kali. We can't understand how, you know, people act, how they prep their demons and they become devotees, or, you know, what modes are controlling them, what they're doing. So they're always mixed. And even if one tries to remain in the mode of goodness, to be all these things, moral and upstanding, and think higher thoughts, because the modes of the lower modes of passion and ignorance will overtake one. They'll use the word onslaught, because they're pushing, they're controlling us, then those qualities won't exist. And ultimately, no matter what we do, no matter what kind of atonement we engage in, no matter what kind of moral role models we look to, we won't actually be able to attain that, to obtain permanently that condition, unless we insert Krishna. This was one of the mysteries of the Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami switched from the fifth canto over to the sixth canto. The fifth canto is full of these horrible things that happen to people when they sin. And the sixth canto says, well, all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna, Ajamil, at the time of death, and you go back to Godhead. So this transition is kind of a mysterious thing, and Maharaj Parikha was asking the question of Shukadeva Goswami, how does this take place? And gradually it comes out that unless you engage in pure devotional service, you won't be able to chant Hare Krishna, and you won't be pure, you won't be able to overcome the hellish conditions of life, and you won't be able to see the wrongs that all these things cause one, and how the law of karma is affected. So in those purports, Prabhupada talks about how one can overcome the ill effects of karma, or overcome prarabdha, or the seed, the lines in the hand, or the seeds of simple desire that are deeply buried in our hearts and our remote recesses of our mind, in many places, how devotees, by engaging in devotional service which is devoid of karma, devoid of jnana, devoid of yoga, one can actually change one does not become the victim of one's karmic activity. So again, it's a matter of putting Krishna in the center. And then he was asked, well, how is it that if you say, Bahunam Janmanam Mante, and Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that only a few people, I mean, after many, many, many births, Bahunam Janma Namate takes many births to become a devotee, and Manushya Nam Sahasreshu, and only a few people can actually understand Krishna after many, many millions try, and only a few obtain it. And then out of those millions, only one attains Krishna. But there's so many devotees all over the world. How can it be? If only a few actually become Krishna conscious, how is it that there's so many thousands of devotees and so many people becoming devotees? And Prabhupada's answer, you know what it was? Anyone want to guess how he answered that question? Yeah. Well, you have a conflict of interest. You heard it. Anyway, go ahead. Because I heard it too. That one, yeah, that's one I heard too. The one will be ISKCON. And then he also said, I think he probably answered this in different ways, but he said that that's the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he's present. We can't think he's not present. And that he, by his mercy, is causing these millions of fallen souls, these demons, or our atheists, whatever we don't call them, to be devotees. That's a miracle. That's the great miracle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's what he's, when he talks about the flood of love of God, it's going to pick everything up, even the cobras. That's what he meant. So that one is ISKCON, and that one is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very special time that we're living in. Prabhupada predicted the fall of communism, which in a sense, 1991, was a kind of fall, it was a very deep blow to the atheistic mentality, because in Russia at that time, institutionalized atheism was prominent for 70 years. And yet, at least it was a kind of forced atheism from the government, but that all fell apart. And almost, Prabhupada almost predicted it to the day, to the year. He said in a few more years this will. But I was told by devotees in Russia that he actually said in 20 years, and it was 1971, he said in 20 years this will be finished, something like that. But anyway, we would have never imagined such a thing could happen. And it was kind of assumed that it probably wouldn't happen, at least within our lifetime, and everyone was going on giving out books, underground chanting, underground reading, everything, underground samizdat, production of literature, and yet it happened. So this is all kind of the miraculous things that happened because of Lord Chaitanya. And even though we live in a very materialistic world, we're very optimistic. We're very bright-faced. Devotees are described as bright-faced because we're living in the wake of Lord Chaitanya, who created this. It's a very unique thing. Formerly, we talked about how in India, people would seek out a guru in a sort of remote place, and then maybe the guru would have one disciple. He could whisper a mantra into his ear or your ear, and it would be the end of, that would be the initiation. You'd have a guru. Maybe there were hundreds and hundreds. But in the wake of Lord Chaitanya, there's been some unusual things that have happened. We've been able to get books printed by the thousands. We've been able to get tapes. We've been able to see Prabhupada all over the world on videotape long after he's physically departed. And we can have access to everything Prabhupada said. So, and we have access to the Maha Mantra. The Maha Mantra, the mantra that was whispered in the ear to individuals, is now available through radio, through television. It's in the air. It's everywhere. And anyone can take it up. Anyone can vibrate this mantra. So it's not a usual mantra. No, Lord Chaitanya was not a usual guru. He wasn't an incarnation. He was Krishna. Krishna himself, 500 years ago. So that is the unique time in which we live. And the unique charge we have is to be representatives of his mercy and to change those who are very allured by the material energy. And sometimes, at least from my point of view, I tend to call them conditioned souls. Or at least to their faces, I don't like to call them demons. Anyway, like I said, there could be a whole class about the way we want to use these words. But it's very interesting how Lord Chaitanya is modifying the consciousness of the planet. He's actually doing it, and we're his representatives. So I didn't get more than about six lines into the purport, but this is a very important one, very important verse, and we'll hear more about it as time goes on. So are there any comments or questions? Yes, Chaitanya Nitai. We hear that sometimes. Yeah. So did everyone hear his question? Sometimes devotees, because they see good qualities in non-devotees, and they see bad qualities in devotees, they think that these people, and we've heard this, we've heard said that they're easier to deal with, they're more functional, they're nicer people, etc., etc. And they're better than devotees. So sometimes this question was actually raised to Prabhupada. I mean, talk about it from different points of view. And said, well, sometimes Prabhupada would get a question like, somebody's wearing different colored socks, they're not polite, they look like they're out in their street chanting, but they look like they're frowning. And we talk to them, they don't seem to know what's going on, and they're, you know, a little rude sometimes. Sometimes they're calling us demons and this and that. Anyway, and all that's happened. And Prabhupada would kind of chew the line and say, well, you know, they may be imperfect, and in the beginning, certainly, and he would talk about them in terms of jewels, like the jewel has dust over it, and if there's a diamond underneath but we can't see it, their beginning, and their bad qualities are being cleared away. And one way to look at that is that we don't criticize the person in the shower and say, he's dirty, he's filthy. No, he's taking a shower. So those who are devotees or becoming devotees, because we're all neophytes, we're all becoming devotees, we may have so many bad qualities that we have to get rid of. And they may be even visible to ourselves and to others. But Prabhupada is saying that if you do become a devotee, yes, devotee, Bhagavate Kinshana, Sarvaya Guna Stratra, Samasate Sura, you're going to develop all the good qualities of human beings. And we see that in the course of time, that is usually the case. I mean, there are cases of unfortunate people who, for whatever reason, but that's exceptional. We've seen people who are mentally, apparently incompetent, and people who are dirty and had all sorts of bad habits, myself included. Not following the four regular principles for sure, not being polite, not being kind, not being hospitable, and it changes. So that's the miracle. That is the miracle that Lord Chaitanya brought, to change the beastly humans into godly saints. That's the miracle. That's the real, Prabhupada said in one lecture, that's the real magic. It's not magic to make something appear in your hand or disappear, or to levitate or to disappear, or to make something grow or not grow, or to escape from a straitjacket. The real miracle is to convert people who are atheistic to theistic. That is miraculous because it's a complete change in consciousness. So time is a factor. It's a very important factor. Another way of looking at it is sometimes we do run into people who seem very well-mannered. I mean, look at some of the people who run corporations. They dress meticulously. They're very polite. They speak very nicely. What do they do when they go home? They take a bite into a big steak. They'll have illicit sex. They'll have a few drinks. They might take some marijuana, right? They might go to gamble their life away. I used to go to Las Vegas to preach every week. I used to fly there from Los Angeles, and sometimes I'd come back on Sunday morning and there'd be people in the airport that were up all night, and they were bragging to each other about how much money they lost. These are, you know, people who have, some of them, millions of dollars of discretionary income. They were bragging to each other, oh yeah, I just dropped 5 million, I just dropped 60,000, 400,000. They're very, it was kind of a one-upsmanship game to see who could lose the most money and not care. And of course they were all filthy drunk, stinking drunk or whatever. But that went on. But in their offices, very polished, very polite, you know, very good managers, run the corporation very nicely. So there's that aspect too. Someone might appear to be very well-behaved and very moral and very honest and straightforward and well-dressed and polite and kind and so on, but may underneath really just, you know, be very superficially that way. I'm not saying they're all like that. There may be some people that are religious and they can become devotees very quickly. But it's very easy to not distinguish, you know, to just look on the surface and not see the time factor. Of course, Prabhupada has written that we should try to develop all the 26 qualities of a devotee, even though they appear automatically. That verse, yes, yes, the bhakti, bhagavati kinchana, I think in the purport that follows that, the verse that follows that in the purport, that Prabhupada says that we should also try consciously to develop the 26 qualities of a devotee and measure our spiritual advancement against whether we have advanced in those ways. So even though there's an automatic development, still one has to try to overcome one's anarthas consciously, to throw them away, to be good, clean, honest, to be attached to Krishna, not argue with anyone, not attached to anything material, be poetic, clean, mild, all the good qualities. There's 26 qualities. And consciously, the statement of the Prabhupada is we should try to develop those things, because automatically certain things will develop, but other things may not develop. Therefore, it's incumbent upon all of us to develop those qualities consciously, to look at what they are. In fact, Prabhupada listed them down in 1966. He didn't tack up too many things on the board. Of course, there were no books in those days, but one of the things he said is that he listed were the 26 qualities of a devotee, and that meant that everyone should come to that standard. Of course, we can see these as sub-religious principles, but actually he put them on the board, and so many of the early followers in New York were pretty musty characters. And part of the reason that Prabhupada put that paper up on the board was that, yeah, we should be clean, we should bathe every day, we should be mild, we should be charitable. And all those things are very, very important. So it's not that we should think that because we're devotees, we're going to automatically get them. We will get some of them automatically, and maybe over time they'll all develop. But at the same time, we have to measure our advancement against those things and try to consciously develop all of that. Very important. Otherwise, we will be fooling ourselves, and we'll be fooling other people. I think the devotees are like that. They don't care. They don't care if they wear different colored socks. They don't care if their hair is disheveled or their clothes are, you know, funny, strange. See how Nanda's always very nicely dressed? He cares. And when we come before Krishna, actually, it's like, you know, if we're going to see what's her name? Helen, the Prime Minister? Helen Clark. We would be on time, and we would look our best. And sometimes when we come before Krishna, we aren't on time, and we don't look our best. So, you know, that's something to think about. Krishna's really the most important person. So all those things, it's not artificial. It's really based on Krishna's, our sense that Krishna is there. And he's watching us, he's hearing it. Every moment he's there. Balaram?
Looking at that translation,
very important. There is value. There's value to being good. But unless one has unflinching devotion, that good can't be sustained. And it'll be overcome by the other modes. So it's very important to read Prabhupada's translations thoroughly and see how, you know, he's defining these words. Good point. Other comments? Yes, Madhuri. I don't profess incarnations and avatar to know the right way to use all of them. Avatar, I mean, I'm not even a Sanskritist, is generally referring to one who descends. That can mean a lot of things. Sometimes Lord Chaitanya is considered to have descended, but he's also considered to be more than an avatar. Because avatars, there are different, six different types of avatars. There's Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Yuga avatars, Sakyavesha avatars, Manvantara avatars, six different types of avatars. And the Sakyavesha avatars are, sometimes Prabhupada is considered that, sometimes Lord Kapila is in that category. Namdi Vyasadeva is in that category. And sometimes they're considered to have material bodies, but what is that material body? It's like a fire. You put an iron into fire and it still maintains its chemical composition, but it acts just like it's fire. So that's another way of looking at avatar. Generally an avatar is considered one who descends. An incarnation, I mean literally, means in the flesh. One who is of the flesh. So we tend to use them kind of interchangeably, and I think Prabhupada did too. Incarnation is more of, it is an English word, and it means one who comes into the human form of life. Now we can't say that about Krishna, because although some people say that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu, but Krishna is described in the Ishapanishad, he's made of Sachidananda, he has no veins, he's not like flesh like we are. Whereas you look at someone like Vyasadeva, when he appeared to have veins in the body and he, you know, left this world and he seemed to leave well, of course he's said to be still wandering about in the Himalayas, but let's take Prabhupada, who is considered to be a Shaktivesha avatar, an avatar of types, and he had sort of physical ailments, physical body. So there's the type of incarnation which is seems to be of flesh, which is a little different. So there's a bit of a distinction. But Prabhupada tended to use the words interchangeably. And I really don't know if we can make a distinction between the two, because we use them when we say what we really mean by an avatar, one who descends, and an incarnation is also really one who descends. The book by, was it Kavi Kanapur? Gaura Ganesha Deepika has explanations of all the various associates of Lord Chaitanya, and some of them are full incarnations, some are partial incarnations, some are incarnations of more than one Manjari or other persons in the spiritual world. So it's a very mysterious concept, actually, to understand what is an incarnation. How does one come from the spiritual world, still maintain the spiritual body, and then come into the flesh, sometimes as more than one person? And sometimes even demonic entities inhabit a material body, and they are a kind of incarnation of sorts, because they're another kind of entity that gets in the body. Generally, I think we refer to avatar as a higher platform, as someone who comes down from the spiritual world. And in some cases, it can be Krishna, and it can be Lord Chaitanya. So it's a pretty close. I mean, maybe somebody else would like to add to this, because this is a very, very deep concept. My understanding is that it's mainly a difference in language. Anybody else want to? You have some thoughts on this, Madhuri? You want to? Okay. Balaram? Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we'll end there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.